going to be doing, right? I mean, we studied Isaiah 1 and Isaiah 2 and Isaiah 3, and today Isaiah 58, which is not the Hebrew way of counting. That's but if you looked ahead and you saw chapter 58, then you probably knew what was coming, and you should have stayed home, maybe. Here's why we're jumping ahead. Can I erase these?
Yes.
I decided to jump out of order because of the calendar. You say it's September 27th. There's nothing on the calendar. But it's also, tonight is the 10th of Nisan. That's the Jewish calendar. It's the month of Nisan. The 10th day starts, days start at night in the Jewish thinking. Did you know that? Do you know why? Why do the Jewish people reckon the day beginning at sundown?
The morning and the evening were the first day.
Well, it doesn't. Genesis is right, but what it says is, and then there was evening and then morning the first day. So it's evening and then morning. So they start the day at sundown. And tonight, at sundown, we'll begin the 10th of Nisan, which is, in according to the Bible, according to God, is the day. Here's a, you can learn one Hebrew word. This is the word for day, yom. Very common throughout the Bible. Yom, day. Yom Kippur. Kippur means covering. The way that the blood would cover over. Cover for sin, or we would say another way of translating it, a theological term, is atonement. So maybe you've seen on your, even some American calendars have the Jewish holidays, and they might call it Yom Kippur, they might call it Day of Atonement. If you want to know who in your company is Jewish, just notice who's not at work tomorrow, because if they're Jewish and even the teeny, you know, bit connected to their tradition, even if they're not religious, they won't be there tomorrow. It's like their Christmas, but, well, I mean, without the presents, without the party, without the fun, but it's the most holy day of the year. And if we're in Israel, right now, they're 8 hours ahead, so it's 7:20 there, so the sun's just gone down, and it's now begun there. And what that means is, for example, the roads are empty. You can go out to the highway where we lived there. Was how far to the highway? A few hundred yards, 500, 600 yards. We could just walk out to the main Tel Aviv to Jerusalem highway, highway number one, it's called in Israel, and on Yom Kippur, go for a walk. Kids can ride their bikes, play frisbee, because there's the occasional police car will come by. There's an Arab town next door. An occasional young Arab, you know, rebel will come out just to disturb the peace or whatever. But there's nothing comparable in America. I mean, on Christmas Day, don't play frisbee on the freeway. it's a holum. It's a holy, solemn day. And so that's starting now in Israel and in a few hours here in America as well. And so because of that, I thought we might talk about it. But I'm going to connect it to Isaiah 58, which talks about fasting. Now this is going to seem a little bit strange perhaps to you today. You may think, man, if Todd really wanted to convince us that we should fast, because I say here, but that's the primary feature of Yom Kippur. The Bible doesn't say, we're going to look at a passage in a minute, the Bible doesn't say you need to fast on Yom Kippur. The word it uses is you should afflict yourselves, which has always been understood as meaning not eating. And the rabbis have added things, not drinking, not washing, no marital relations, and there's a number of things. that they're just not allowed to do on this day. But chief among them is fasting. In fact, in Israel, I saw a few years ago, I think it was about 75% of people will fast. And in Israel, 20% are religious. So it's just that much a part of their culture. So I'll pass out these handouts, and I did make more today, so there might be enough for every single person. And I put more notes down here than I partly would have liked. I kind of like to leave a little more blank, so for a few reasons. Yeah, go ahead.
When you were in Israel, did you and your students observe them?
We did. Voluntarily?
Mm-hmm.
We did. I took it as an opportunity to do a number of things, to teach them about what Yom Kippur is, to teach them about fasting, some of which we're going to talk about today, and to be part of the culture, because I'm going to say this here, we are not commanded today to keep the fast. We're not commanded to keep the Day of Atonement. So I was not encouraging the students, and I'm not encouraging you today to observe this because it's a law that we're under. But rather, I encourage them and would encourage you because of the things that God can teach us from it. The law is, in part, a shadow of things to come. It's foolish to adhere to the shadow and ignore or deny the reality. But there can be great teaching value in learning from God's revelation that pointed to that reality. So, part of my intention here today is that you would consider or reconsider the role of fasting in your life. But we're going to get there kind of a strange way. We're going to kind of take a biblical approach. We're going to start here on the first page looking at what the Bible says, and this is all of it's going to be brief, and that's the reason why I put more down here. I printed more out because I just knew not enough time, which this will save us time. I can move a little bit quicker. So we're going to start with Leviticus. What does the Bible say about Yom Kippur? Then the next page is Isaiah 58. That's going to be brief too. It's only 14 verses. It's not particularly difficult. And there's a primary point in Isaiah 58, which is going to seem possibly to run counter to my goal. But my goal is not the most important thing. The greater goal is that we're biblical. Okay, so, in fact, I heard a message. I think I've only heard Isaiah 58 preached one time, and the goal of the preacher was to encourage people to fast, and it absolutely convinced me of the opposite. I was convinced when that sermon was over that I had no need of fasting, and I was very thankful. But I then have learned some things since then, and those are on the next pages 3 and 4. So it's going to be a little bit quick. Hopefully I'm clear, and hopefully we can interact too. Some things I say or that are written you may not agree with. Some things may make you angry or certainly uncomfortable. You know, let's just all agree here. We all agree that fasting is hard. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. It hurts. Okay, so that's true for everybody. I'm not advocating it because of, like, I'm some strange, you know, creature that, like, enjoys pain or something. But for other reasons that I think are, maybe there's something better. Maybe there's some greater gain. So, here we are on page one of Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. It's described in depth. If you want to read it, if you decide maybe you're going to consider observing or thinking about it tomorrow, you can read all of Leviticus 16. That's the long version. That talks about what the priest does. Then look at Leviticus 23. You can flip there. I don't know what you know about Leviticus. I don't know much. But here's one thing I do know, and maybe you want to know it. God's calendar is Leviticus 23. There's a word in Hebrew that doesn't have a good English translation, but it would be translated something like appointed times. God's appointed times. God has set on the calendar these days, or there's some weeks, a few weeks, that are his days to meet with his people. Some people call them God's feasts, but some of them aren't feasts, like Yom Kippur, because you don't eat anything. So let's just read. There's only a few verses here. I'll read it. Leviticus 23, starting in verse 26. The Lord said to Moses, the 10th day of the 7th month. By the way, the calendar goes in order, so we're jumping in the middle, because we've already looked at it's already talked about the feasts, or the appointed times in the first month, but in second month. The 10th day of the 7th month is the day of atonement. Hold a sacred assembly and deny yourselves, this translation, or afflict yourselves. Anybody have a different translation than one of those two?
Humble
yourselves.
What verse?
27.
Oh, 27.
Yeah, so all of those will work. And present an offering made to the Lord by fire. Do no work on that day, because it is the day of atonement, when atonement is made for you before the Lord your God. Now, that verse summarizes what chapter 16 talked about. How is the atonement made? Well, the priest does, and on the bottom of this first page, I summarize it really briefly. Well, how is the atonement made? Well, a priest makes atonement, one, for himself, because if he's going to go before God, he's got to be clean himself. So he offers a bull, and he also offers two burnt offerings, one for himself, one for the people. Then he goes in. This is the only day of the entire year that he enters into the Holy of Holies. So, well, what's in the Holy of Holies that makes it so special? God. What do you mean, God? I mean, the Ark of the Covenant, which is called his throne. God sits on his throne, the Ark of the Covenant. How does God sit? He doesn't have a body. That's true. God is spirit. But he manifests himself from Mount Sinai until Ezekiel 11. That's where he manifests himself in a cloud. The Shekinah glory is sometimes referred to. So that's where the Lord was. And in fact, it was such that one of the things the priest did when he went in was he had to make a cloud, so that it would obscure the presence or the glory of the Lord, because that's how holy the Lord is, that even the only one person, and only on this day, and taking, you know, the sacrifices and the blood of an ant, even, you know, that's not enough, as it were. Then there's the ceremony of the scapegoat. There's two goats. One is randomly selected to die, and one is randomly selected. He puts his hands on them. All the sins of the nation are symbolically put on the goat, and then the goat is sent out into the desert, where far away. So it's taking the sins away to disappear, as it were. So that's what's wrapped up in verse 28. Now, verse 29 says, anyone who does not deny himself on that day must be cut off from his people. And some take that to mean executed, some take that to mean banished in permanent exile, but either case, you don't want it. It's a very serious crime not to do this. Verse 30, I will destroy from among his people anyone who does any work on that day. You shall do no work at all. This is to be a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. Wherever you live, it is a Sabbath of rest for you, and you must deny yourself. So, how many times has it said that? Okay, repetition here is very important. And here's the, from the evening of the ninth day of the month until the following evening. So that's how the fast works among the Jewish people today. They will eat something before sundown, and then they will not eat, you know, anything after that until tomorrow's sundown. Any questions?
Are there any provisions for guarding
yes.
the nation?
Oh, for what?
Guarding the nation during this holiday.
Well, it brings up the Yom Kippur War, 1973. Some of you probably remember that, although it might not have been as, might not have affected you as much if you didn't realize just how sacred that day is in Israel. I mean, people, they don't have the radios on, they don't have the TVs on. So if Syria attacks, as they did on that day, very strategically, they got a lot of hours advance notice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now the military does, is working, and since that war, I mean, I'm sure there's some ways. I don't remember.
Oh.
No, I don't think so. You know, and that can take me off in a long way, but so I'll just say shortly, briefly, that God asks some crazy things from his people that would seem to really jeopardize their harvest, their military safety, and he doesn't give them exceptions. And you can say, well, God really meant for them to be, you know. I don't know. What I read is, God says, you trust me, I'll take care of you. Now, if I was, you know, called in to be the military advisor to Israel today, I don't know that I would say that to them, because there's a different reality where they're not walking in faith. So it would be stupid to say, well, we're going to, you know, go our own way and reject God and yet not have any defense, you know, on Shabbat or whatever. But okay, let's go to Isaiah 58. You can turn there. We're going to read it together. You know, there are not many passages in the Bible about fasting. That's one of the reasons why, well, it's one of the reasons why we don't do it, I think. It's one of the reasons why we can kind of not think about it, and we can kind of, you know, excuse it. And you're not going to hear me say that it is mandated by the Bible. I don't believe it is. But Isaiah 58 talks about fasting. And so, since we're studying Isaiah, I feel that it's important that we consider what it says. And my approach is to, here's the answer, as it were. Here's, we read it through, you'll be like going, now this contradicts everything Todd seems to be saying. But I take a both-and approach. See if you can figure out what I mean by that. So who would like to read? We'll take two readers, seven verses each. Just raise your hand and go ahead, Lynette, if you'll take verses 1 through 7, and then who will take 8 through the end? Sandy.
Is it a fast like this which I choose, a day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? Would you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast which I choose, to loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into the house?
was actually listening to an audiobook this week. It's called Crazy Love by Francis Chan. And, he quotes a verse here, a verse there. It's a good book. But then, one place, he says, you know what, there's a chapter of the Bible, I got to read the whole thing to you. So just listen. And it was Isaiah 58. That man, of all the chapters, this guy picks Isaiah 58. Here we are this week. But yeah, powerful chapter. And some key points in here. Let's look at it. I broke it down, you can see my outline here, into two parts. And I've said it before, I'll probably say it every time, but outlines can be a little bit, you know, too specific. I mean, you know, they're human. But I think I see in the first five verses here the fasting that God despises. And then, in the second half of the chapter, the fasting that he delights in, what he desires. So, let's look at the first five verses here. He gets their attention in verse 1. Listen up. He shouts it. He wants to declare to the people their sin. What is their sin here? Well, they look good. They look religious. I mean, they're going to church, as it were, every time the doors are open. Not only for Sunday morning, but for sure the business meeting on Sunday night, and the prayer meeting on Wednesday, and choir practice. They externally, it looks, right? Day after day they seek him out. They seem eager to know my ways. It's like they're doing right and they haven't forsaken the commands of the Lord. And they're fasting. And yet, look, verse 3, they're fasting. Their motive is wrong. They think that by it they can manipulate the Lord. There's a lesson here for the church today. People who do things, we'll take today's sermon as an example. If you start doing that, well, Lord, I'm going down to the rescue mission every week. Is that the college group?
It's probably the little girl that, you know, the baby that belongs to the college group.
And you're doing, and you say, well, God, you know, you said you'd bless, so like, where is it? And this is what they're doing.
Well, that's the essence of spiritism, trying to manipulate the powers for good or to ward off evil.
That's right. It's the essence of ancient religion. It's the way the Babylonians and all of them, well, that's why all related to their gods. The Greeks and the Romans. And
twins of stench.
Spiritism. And the second part of verse 3. Yes, they're fasting. You can fast, and God will hate it. Because if you're doing it in the way that you desire, if you're doing it while you're exploiting your workers, while you're fighting, while you're attacking one another, You can break out the sackcloth, but if you're not treating your neighbor with love, then it's worse than no religious observance whatsoever. He asks rhetorically, verse 5, is this what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? It's absolutely not. So, there's a warning here for all of us, and I would want you to consider or reconsider, and I don't know where we're all at. We're probably in different places with regard to fasting, but there's a real danger if you think, well, fasting will, you know, make me look good for God, or if I fast, then I can extract something in exchange. You know, I'm suffering, Lord, so therefore you owe me. Woe to the one who thinks that way. So look at the second section then. What is the kind of fasting that God desires? Ties in with the sermon today. That wasn't planned either. I mean, just the way the Lord
works. Yeah, I was
going to
ask you, did you and Brian compare notes there and you get it all figured out?
Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free, and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry, and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked, to clothe him? I think this is actually a better passage to make the point he made than Matthew 25, because as he said, Matthew 25 is about brothers. So Union Rescue Mission, I don't know if that's necessarily believers, but this is talking about your neighbor in general. So the judgment there is dealing with how you treat your brother, but here the Lord's speaking about how you treat your neighbor. Sharing your food, clothing the naked, and so forth. Now, you see my outline here? It's kind of goofy, I know, but I laid it out this way so that you could see the back and forth in this section. There's God's delight or his desire. What he requires is the first stated, and then what follows, the blessing. And then it goes back in verse 10b, or 9b rather. What God desires, and then how he blesses it. And then what he desires, and then so three times in this section. Which does, you know, what can I say here? I mean, I've just denounced the spirit which would try to say that God owes me anything. That's horribly wrong. But you know, there's a reality that God just loves to bless the obedient. He does. He just, and three times here, and these words aren't kind of like, I'll give you, you know, a 2% raise on your salary, or I'll make you, you know, look at the blessings here. Your light will break forth like the dawn. Now this is where we do bad, because we skipped to Isaiah 58 and we didn't do all the other chapters in before, but there's light that's talked about here,
right?
You know, in Isaiah before, like the light of the servant, the light, you'll be a light to the nations. Your healing will quickly appear, your righteousness, you know, this is a lot better than a raise. These things, what it's talking about here. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. This is why you can turn off all of the military equipment on Shabbat. Because God is, this is what God says he will do if the people will live according to the covenant that they agreed to. I have to bring it back. It all goes back to the Mosaic covenant. So, the relationship God had entered into with his people, if they would obey and he would bless, and if they didn't obey, then he would curse. Okay, so yes,
do you believe that would apply today? The people of Israel honored the covenant that God had set out. Would he fulfill the promises to them today, or would he say, yeah, that's fine, but he missed the little point about the Messiah, so therefore you're out of date?
Yeah, the answer is B. Yeah, I mean, there's no faithfulness to God apart from the Messiah. So there's a good verse in John. 1 John 2. I don't remember the verse. Like, it's around 20. But it says, I mean, he who does not accept, does not receive the Son, does not receive the Father. So I don't believe there's no approach to God apart from his Son. So
this passage reminds me a little bit of Jesus talking to the Pharisees.
Oh, yeah.
And saying, you've missed the point here,
right,
in all of your goals.
That's
and
right.
God.
Matthew 23 exactly what.
Sorry, and even just the Sermon on the Mount.
Yep. Right. And you know what, friends? The danger that they were guilty of, that they fell into, is intrinsic to human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, It is. Oh, it's a lot easier to follow rules. Yes.
Tom, I just, yeah, you've been there. I always wondered, how is it that God has, in history, he made a point. We read it this morning in the service. He made a point of destroying that temple. It just emphasizes again, there's only one way. And that way, there's only one way left, because they can't fulfill this anymore. There's no scapegoat.
That's right.
There's yep. no Holy of Holies.
That's right.
And yet they, and I'm saying they, but no way of atonement. I mean, what a desperate religion.
This is the question. I was thinking through this, I don't know, sometime earlier this morning, just about, and I was going to write it on the, and I didn't remember my question exactly, but the question for the Jew today is, how are your sins atoned for? That's the question to ask him. And if you're at the Western Wall, right, well, maybe now's a little bit too late, but, you know, earlier in the day, or, we ask him that. Because when they've rejected the atonement, I just mentioned that in a point here on the first page. Hebrews 9 describes the final day of atonement. Jesus is that. So if you don't have Jesus and you don't have the temple, so I want that is question number one in interacting with Jewish people. Now, if you're interacting with a Jewish person who's totally not connected to their faith, then that question, you may need to work to get to that question. But for those who are religious,
how do most
their
augments?
Answer is, what's that?
I'm sorry, yeah, I said, how do most augments?
Prayer is like the substitute now. God takes our prayers instead. And there's a verse, I think, in Hosea, which they use to support that. Yes?
And they do say, because we do not have a temple today. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a good answer.
I know.
But yeah.
Do you remember several years ago, 10 years ago, I think it was Charles Stanley made the, maybe it wasn't him, but it was somebody, you know, big in the Baptist world, made the comment that that God did not hear the Jews' prayers. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. What did he teach? But it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, I may remember it, but it's one of these more. It's like a Robertson, Hagee.
Yeah,
not Hagee, but.
It was Paul President of the Baptist Association.
At the time, I forget his name.
Mm-hmm. Okay, President of the Baptist Association. Yeah, you know, there are true things, and if you're the president of certain associations, you just got to be careful what you say. So let's go to well, I want to make one point. Can I? Yeah, I can make it really briefly, because it talks about the Shabbat here. The Sabbath is Shabbat, is the, what you say in Hebrew, and emphasizes the importance of Shabbat. And because there's the confusion never seems to leave the church, here's the very brief answer. Maybe we could deal with it later at more length. Why did the Sabbath matter so much? It was the symbol of the Mosaic Covenant. It was the bow on the package. In the same way that the rainbow was the symbol of the Noahic Covenant, God's covenant with Noah. So why don't we keep the Sabbath today? Say, well, it's one of the Ten Commandments. We keep the Ten Commandments. No, we don't. Okay, here. Just give me some big trouble. But we don't. Mosaic, we don't keep the Ten Commandments because they're part of the Mosaic Covenant. We don't keep the Mosaic Covenant because it has been fulfilled in Jesus. And yes, it's true that most of those Ten Commandments are ethical principles, which are still, you know, it's still true. We don't kill each other because we're made in the image of God. It's not because it's in the Mosaic Covenant. The Sabbath is a unique one because it's a symbol of that, and I don't want to honor the Mosaic Covenant, which has been fulfilled in Jesus. I want to honor Jesus. I don't know if that caused more problems than it's all. But look at this third page. I'm not going to look at the fourth page at all. I just put it on there because had the space and the value of fasting. And I printed these verses here, so you don't have to turn to them. Matthew 9. Jesus answered, there is a context here. Time is so short here, but the disciples of John the Baptist come and they say to Jesus, we fast, the Pharisees fast, but Jesus, your disciples don't fast. Here's Jesus' answer. How can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he is with them? Okay, Jesus saying, I'm here. I mean, this is the king is now here. He hasn't set up the kingdom, but he's present with them. You don't mourn during the wedding, as it were. But then he says, the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. When is that? Right now. I mean, right? I mean, the bridegroom has been taken from the disciples of Jesus. And then it says, then they will fast. Is that a command or an encouragement? Or look at Matthew 6, 16 to 18. This is easy to take this in a negative way. Like, oh yeah, we're safe. We don't have to fast because, you know, these other guys are doing it the wrong way. They are hypocrites. They try to show off. They want everybody to know, oh, look how I'm suffering for God. And for them, they've gotten all of their reward. There's nothing more for them. But, verse 17, when you fast. It seems to imply that there would be a time when they would fast. So when you fast, look good. Take a shower. Put on new clothes so that you're not doing it for men. It's a secret between you and the Lord. Maybe not. Can't keep it a secret from your husband or wife. But it's not, you're not doing it for that. You're not doing it so that everybody knows. And then your Father, who knows, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. So I wrote down the reasons to fast here that I would rather have not written down. I'd rather talk them through. But I knew that time would not allow, and I was right. We do have 5 minutes to just maybe mention a couple things here, or you can ask questions, or I don't know if we have time for a full-scale fight, but you know, and maybe I'll say here too, by way of these reasons came from one way or another out of my reading of this book by John Piper called A Hunger for God, subtitled Desiring God Through Fasting and Prayer. He makes a good case after I heard the sermon on Isaiah 58 saying, oh, I don't have to fast. Then I read this book and was convinced that fasting has a place. Doesn't make it easy. But here's just a few things. Maybe I'll just talk off the top of my head instead of looking at the list. Without pretending at all without having more than just a few basic observations, take away food for a day. And again, I know many of you have done this in practice. Some maybe already be doing it regularly, but you feel weak. And I don't just mean like I'm running out of calories to run this, but you just feel frail and dependent. Good reminder. Just how, you know, a lot of times we feel in control and in charge, and one day, three meals that you miss, or two, if you do Yom Kippur this way, if you were to keep it tonight, then you could get your dinner in before sunset, and then get your dinner in after sunset, you've only skipped two meals, and just already feeling like, I'm not in control. There's a value in that. A real value in recognizing your utter dependence on food and God who provides that food. Fasting reveals what masters us. That ties in there. Paul says, I will not be mastered by anything. And, food is good, and I say this on the back side of this page here, but we're not, you know, fasting doesn't say that food is bad, or, you know, it's a recognition of the goodness of it, and it's a setting it aside for a certain time for communion with the Lord. There's a couple ways you can. Some people will fast and just be angry all day because they're so. You'll be tempted to that, right? I mean, you. I started to do a multi-day fast once. I didn't finish because there was a certain point in there. I was just, this just reveals my immaturity, and I was just so angry, and it was just. I just felt like this is not having any spiritual value. So now I would caution you not to make that to be an excuse for you never. We're so comfortable and life is so easy and there's not. Maybe it's okay to add something hard that we don't have to have, but just to put it in there. And say, Lord, I love you this much that I'm willing to surrender this for you. So that's not practical. You still love God if you have food. And part of me wants to rebel against everything is so practical. You could probably talk for a couple hours right now, Derek. But I need to close in prayer. I have a couple extra copies of this book, and the library has a copy. If you want to borrow it this week or any other time, you're welcome to. Let's pray. Father, this is a very brief and weak presentation of what I believe you would want us to know and to think and to believe and to live. But your word is powerful, and you have put these verses out, at least that today, for us to all to consider and to reconsider. And Lord, I pray that your Spirit would convict where needed, and I don't know who is where or who needs what, but you do. And so I pray that your Spirit would do a work on everyone's heart to consider how we can be most obedient and how we can most love you and how we can increase our desire for you. And maybe fasting is a tool that you could use that we would hunger more for you. So do a good work in our lives, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Todd. Just a quick reminder, the business meeting tonight at 6. Go communicate with Becky if you haven't signed up for Supper 6 Clubs. And next Sunday, after Sunday school at this time, we'll just, Cindy will pick a location that will close by, and those of us again will just enjoy lunch together. Have a good week.
Business meeting over in time for a quick bite before sunset.